And welcome back. We have a lot of information for you this hour. A terrific video that I want you to pay close attention to. It goes back and validates everything we were saying years ago. And they are still using remdesivir in hospitals. So if you are unfortunate enough to collect a case of COVID and go to the hospital, well, first you're asking for big trouble. And as you know, I had a friend, both of us had a friend, who went in the hospital. He might have just had the flu. And they diagnosed him with PCR, which is a bogus diagnostic tool. And they ended up giving him remdesivir, despite his completely adamant insistence that no way did he get remdesivir. And famous words of the doctor, when I had the friend of ours, I said, get your records, look at your chart. He said, well, you know, you're right. I looked and it's there. And I confronted the doctor and he said, well, don't worry. I just gave you enough to save your life. And he was dead a week later. So they're killing people. You used to be able to go into a hospital and expect to get well and go home. Now, if you go into a hospital, it's 50-50 whether you're going to get out of there with any semblance of improved health. It's not good. Not good. All right. Is my other half standing by or sitting by? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
The brains of the operation.
Right. I don't know about that.
I do. It's also something I'll mention again. Erica has such a depth and breadth of knowledge, it's astonishing. And I tell you that from personal experience, I know. And we don't lay it all out there. We put out as much as we think people can understand, synthesize, and use to their advantage. But she really knows a lot, and it's a real pleasure to be able to have somebody like that plugged into this venue that we've created over our fourth year now. And it's not fun to do in many cases. It's not upbeat. It's not uplifting. It's terrible because what's been done to humankind is done. It's not like they're waiting for part two. Oh, they're talking about avian flu now. Oh, the avian flu is 60% case fatality rate. It's coming. It's going to be terrible. No, they've already done it. 700 million injections into 330 million Americans. It's done. And I had another story today of shedding. I mentioned it earlier.
Oh, I see them all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So at any rate, if we wanted to get down into the real rudimentary science of it all, we could do that easily. But to what end? No one's going to remember it. So we try to keep this as approachable and as accessible as we can. And I think that's the best service of journalism dealing with something of this nature of science. It's been quite a ride. And the more we look, the more we find. And just remember, heme. And porphyrins. Nobody's talking about that except us chickens.
Yeah, and that's a major player in this. You know, I don't know how people can look at blood in the kind of condition that it is and not ask questions.
I don't either.
The blood is being destroyed. Why?
Absolutely.
And, you know, without the blood, the oxygen carrying capacity and, you know, the return of carbon dioxide from the tissues, you're dead.
At least. Or worse.
And we are seeing, you know, we read a couple weeks ago reports of people lining up at, I don't know if it's oxygen bars or hyperbaric places where you can go for hyperbaric treatments, but people are deficient in usable oxygen. I say usable because if oxygen isn't managed within the body, it's toxic.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I hear people
saying
that.
People don't understand that. They don't understand
that. Well, oxygen's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You can't live without it. But if it isn't managed properly, it's toxic. It's reactive. It burns. You know, what do you want to do when you want to make a fire? You've got to add oxygen. And so when you have inflammation in your body and you're adding oxygen to it, you know, you're going to increase that burn. And I hear people saying that this is radiation poisoning. And in to a point, they're correct. The type of damage that's being done at the cellular level is almost indistinguishable. I would say it is indistinguishable from radiation poisoning. But right. You can achieve the same kind of destruction with the combination of iron and oxygen that you can with gamma radiation. You know, in particular, when iron is dysregulated in the body, when it's not being managed because of this poison,
right?
And then you add things like hydrogen peroxide. I see these people drinking and even inhaling hydrogen peroxide right now, and I cringe.
Oh, come on. You were
because you are creating
online?
The most toxic free radical known.
Yeah,
hydroxyl radical. And that, once it starts burning up your lipids in your right. cell membranes, in your mitochondrial membranes, it self-perpetuates. So it keeps going.
Crazy.
And that's why they be very careful with these oxygen therapies. And that includes chlorine dioxide. And I know there's a lot of people pushing that right now. And
I don't know what's being talked about. Is that still being talked about? There's a lot of chatter about CDS.
Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. They're all of these things that people are led to believe are the cure or the antidote are still being promoted. And I hate to tell you, it's not that simple. You're not going to burn this stuff out of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. No, I this thing about hydrogen peroxide, I don't see that. I mean, you've seen it online.
It has its place. I will say it has its place. Mm-hmm. This isn't it. This is a disease of oxidative stress. And as I said, when you've got dysregulated iron and you start adding hydrogen peroxide to that, wow. Yeah, you'll have radiation poisoning, all right.
What are our thoughts about, are they going to roll this avian flu out or not? People are making, like I said, I'm just curious. People are already panicking about it. They're saying a story today, 20% of milk tests positive for avian influenza. It just sounds like fear porn to me, all of it. I don't know if they're going to do it.
Yeah, it does, because, you know, the viruses are specific to the species, unless they've been tweaked. And what's the whole point of pasteurizing milk? It's to get rid of the pathogens,
exactly.
Right? So what, it's the milk not being pasteurized properly?
Right. I don't know. I've never trusted flash pasteurization anyhow. I think it's overrated, and it doesn't always work. And that's how they claim it.
Well, and it destroys a lot of the nutrients that are in the
wipes
milk.
Wipes them out.
Denatures the proteins.
Perfect little segue to reminding you all that the big secret out there is BioSuperfood. It's a remarkable product. There was another story this week about which algae was it? I can't remember now.
Oh, spirulina.
One of the algaes. Spirulina, that's right. Got a big push in terms of being an effective way to try to mitigate some of the damage from the spike and the mRNA bioweapons. And that was
a very favorable report. And yeah, chlorophyll that's in these algaes is very beneficial, especially when you're struggling to make heme, because chlorophyll is the plant version of heme. It's pretty much the identical structure as heme,
right?
But instead of iron, it contains magnesium. And somehow or other, I'm not sure, I don't know if anyone knows how it does it, but it can somehow get oxygen or electrons into the mitochondria to facilitate oxygen delivery.
Uh-huh.
You know, porphyrins absorb light, which is energy, and so that transfers electrons into places that, well, can need them. I mean, you know, your electron transport chain is what how you make ATP when your mitochondria is working.
When it's working. Porphyrins. All right. That's another thing. You will not hear this spoken about by any of the other experts. I would be surprised if they tried to wade into that. It's a whole other dynamic, another dimension in this crisis that no one talks about. And the people now, the rank and file, are so overloaded with misinformation, disinformation about what they're up against now. It's not funny. They've been intentionally led down the pathways of complete oblivion. They're chaotic. They're uncertain. They don't know what's going on, and they're afraid. And it's a bad combination. It happens, though.
Well, we should probably just briefly review the porphyria aspect.
Yeah, this is something, again, you're not going to hear anywhere else but here. And it's true.
All right, so early on...
Let's describe what porphyrins are first, what their job is, and where they come from. It's one of the...
Porphyrins are molecules that your body makes. They're the building block of heme.
Mm-hmm.
Heme is needed to transport iron.
It's one of the eight steps in the process of creating heme, porphyrins.
Well, porphyrins are the building blocks themselves. There are different types of porphyrins that are produced along that pathway.
Okay, but they are crucial.
So there's multiple types of porphyrins depending on what stage the building process is at.
Mm-hmm.
So when your body wants to make more heme, it's synthesized mostly in the liver. About 80% of the porphyrins in your body are synthesized in the liver, and then the other 20% are in the bone marrow.
And if I might quickly say, heme is crucial in many body processes and constructing of body elements. It's not just one thing.
Right. So when we think of heme, we tend to think of hemoglobin, which is the oxygen-carrying or iron-containing molecule in the red blood cells. And so that allows it to capture oxygen and deliver it to cells and then pick up carbon dioxide and take it back to the lungs and exhale it. So, but in addition to hemoglobin, there are several other proteins in the body that need heme to function. Now, we've mentioned myoglobin, and that's in the muscle. That helps the muscle store oxygen. Then we have cytochromes, which are used in the mitochondria so that you can make energy, ATP.
Right.
We have catalase, which is responsible for breaking down hydrogen peroxide because, you know, if you can't break down hydrogen peroxide, it's going to burn you. And we mentioned at one point these sores in the mouth, the cheeks, after shedding exposure, is probably a buildup of hydrogen peroxide due to a lack of catalase. Again, catalase needs heme to work. And then we have nitric oxide synthase, which you hear a lot about nitric oxide. I want to boost my nitric oxide so that you can expand your blood vessels and get more blood flow to the organs. Well, the enzyme that does that needs heme. And when you don't have heme to create this endothelial nitric oxide synthase, you're going to get a buildup of amyloid in the endothelium, along with high blood pressure and clots and cognitive impairment, all of which we're seeing now.
Oh, awful. It's just growing. Remember, all of you out there, if you were watching, we had an image of blood. It was a still image, I think, taken with a dark field, I think. And it showed in the blood of an affected individual little dots all over. They weren't quantum dots. They were little amyloid seedlings all over the blood. And they go all throughout the body, and they look for a place to plant themselves and begin to grow.
Well, they get stuck.
And they end up, yes, and they end up being 3 feet long in terms of an obstruction or a clot, if you want, in the femoral artery, right? It can be in any vein, any part of your plumbing, this stuff can grow. And then when it gets loose in the organs, it can destroy your organs. Certainly the most important organ, probably the heart and the brain, are wide open targets for this. So anyway, it's almost as if most everyone has these little seedlings in their blood now of amyloid. I don't think that would be a big shock, would it? Would that surprise you?
What they say. Everybody, unvaxxed and vaxxed alike, have some degree of these amyloid fibrils in their blood.
Courtesy of the spike protein jumping over from somebody who's shedding them.
Yeah, so you breathe these things in, and then they're instantly in your bloodstream. I mean, it's a biotoxin, you know, similar to mycotoxins, which are produced by mold, similar to, the dinoflagellate, the red tide type of poisoning. All you have to do is breathe those aerosols in, and they're in your bloodstream. And they're toxic. Algae blooms from lakes. Again, they're neurotoxic, but, you know, you breathe them in. You don't know you're breathing them in. Maybe you get symptoms.
But those are correlated with...
What's that?
You can't know, of course.
No, you can't. There's no smell to this stuff. And yet it's exerting a very powerful toxic effect. And, you know, the degree to which one person can deal with it versus another is probably genetic to some extent. I mean, we know that about 25% of the population can't handle biotoxins. Their immune systems don't see them. So they have a very broad, non-specific, aggressive inflammatory response to try to get rid of them. Whereas if you're able to... Keyword you just heard,
inflammatory. You don't want your body to be inflammatory. And it gets that way real quick with the either shedding or the shot for damn sure. You mentioned nitric oxide. That's interesting. Mm. Nitrous oxide is laughing gas.
Yes.
So this must be a distant cousin somehow.
Getting back to this heme thing, it was known early on in the pandemic that this virus targeted the red blood cell. In addition to the endothelium, it was the ACE2 receptor that seemed to be its target, one of many, by the way. But the red blood cells were getting destroyed and
knocked off, just slaughtered.
So when that happens, now you've got a non-functional red blood cell. The heme is loose. It's got to be dealt with. Heme on its own is toxic if it isn't bound by another protein to dispose of it. Or broken down, then it's going to damage the endothelium, and that's the iron will also damage the endothelium. But the body wants to replace that heme, and so it starts the process. And because it's such a labor-intensive and, complicated eight-step process to build another molecule of heme, there's plenty of opportunity for things to go wrong. If you're deficient in certain nutrients, it can go wrong.
So think of it as an eight-step process, and they all have to be carried out correctly for heme to be produced.
And then there can be toxins that interfere with it. Lead is one, mercury is another, and now the spike protein is one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So your body's not able to complete the process. So these porphyrins, these building blocks of heme, build up, and they are toxic. And you can get a long list of symptoms from the buildup of these porphyrins, depending on which organs they're building up in. A lot of times it's the liver, and you will feel a lot of pain and discomfort there. A lot of times they can end up in the skin, and then in any skin that gets exposed to sunlight will blister because of the oxidative stress. They're absorbing light and causing oxidative stress. But they're also neurotoxic. So you can have a long list of neurological issues, including...
Many, many.
Psychosis.
Many. Yes. How fun. This is all because of porphyrins. And no one's talking about it, okay?
No.
You heard it first here. But seriously, this is not something that people even want to entertain. Why? Because I think they knew. We think they knew about this, and it was built into the whole damn program of genocide with these bioweapons.
This when you don't have heme
outcome.
When you don't have heme, a deficiency of heme and porphyria that results is implicated in Alzheimer's. There's literature published on that. It's likely involved in a long list of neurodegenerative disorders, just this inability to manage iron in neural tissue. It's also implicated in cancers. The control or the regulation of microRNAs, and this is how your DNA gets expressed in these little packages of microRNAs, that's controlled by heme. And not to mention just the ability to deliver oxygen, manage oxygen. So when you don't have heme to carry oxygen, you basically suffocate. Your cells are being asphyxiated. Well, at the same time, when oxygen does flood the body, you get the creation of free radicals, lots and lots of free radicals. So you're a lot of damage occurs when you cannot regulate heme and the iron that goes with it.
Right. Okay, so it's in the record now. You can play this program again and share it if you're interested in following these two things that are just not talked about. And the things that aren't talked about ought to be of great concern to anybody who's seriously investigating and trying to research this.
Yeah, it does seem like the lid came down on the just that whole topic of heme shortly,
yes.
Well, not long into the pandemic. I mean, the one of the best papers I've read so far, and this is interesting because it involves copper. This was a Chinese paper that's now been redacted or revised 11 times since its first publication.
Oh.
The original title was COVID-19 Disease, ORF 8, that's open reading frame 8, and surface glycoprotein inhibit heme metabolism by binding to porphyrin. There you go, you know. And so what they found, interestingly, was that there is a domain on the spike protein that can bind to copper.
See, that didn't just happen, friends, okay? Understand. None of this.
It's awfully convenient.
None of this just happened. It was all planned. And the diabolical nature, the satanic diabolical nature of the people who were involved with this, and I think there might have been some other, but anyhow, is second to none. These people are as evil as it gets. This thing has so many ways
of
being anti-life.
The significance of this copper thing is they hypothesize, the authors of this paper, say that when the spike binds to this copper, it allows the spike to act like a molecule known as hemocyanin. And hemocyanin is the invertebrate, insects, crustaceans, that's their version of hemoglobin. The difference is that the hemocyanin contains a copper molecule, so it allows it to capture oxygen and transport it around the body for the organism's needs for oxygen. And so when people were experiencing the happy hypoxia, these people were, their hemoglobin was desaturated. They were not capturing, binding oxygen, but they weren't having any symptoms. So these authors contend that if the spike is acting as hemocyanin, well, their oxygen needs were covered.
Got it.
And it is interesting. Copper's dysregulated in this situation, too. Now, is it because the copper is being stolen by the spike? And the other thing is that, you know, people are becoming, what would I call it, electroconductive? And that may explain why we're able to pick up Bluetooth signals, apparently, from vaxxed people. And I've also seen the same with unvaxxed people.
Right.
I don't think they've been injected with anything of that nature. I think what they're doing is amplifying a signal that is already in the ambient environment. because of this iron overload and copper dysregulation. I mean, you've got iron for the magnetism, you've got copper for the conductivity, and you've got an antenna, really.
Okay. We have a terrific testimonial tonight, and we should move into that. We're running a little late already. Really jarring information. I think you'll find this to be very interesting. A medical coder, that's someone who works with a hospital employee who, there's a code for every disease, every treatment given, every drug and so forth, and the medical coder works with the insurance companies to, she creates or he creates a report with all the proper codes, and then they submit it to the insurance company. It becomes a matter of record then. This is a medical coder, C-O-D-E-R. The woman transfers information included in a patient's medical records into a database. Okay, so let's go listen to this. I'm going to start around 2:30 or something like that, and we're going to jump ahead. We'll do this. It's very interesting. So here we go.
That's when the bonuses came out, too. They had to have that diagnosis.
I got to back it up. Sorry. Hold on. Now, she's going to get into the city. This is really dirty. Dirty, down and dirty. The bonuses paid to hospitals regarding the COVID protocols that they were enforcing. They get paid. You'll hear. Here we go.
What's going on? Even though there had already been declared an emergency, and you could see the HHS and the WHO and all of those case maps that showed us all the outbreaks, well, it definitely didn't match up with what we were seeing in the hospital, and even the admin admitted that, so they created their own map. So that was sort of why the COVID diagnosis came out. But that's when the bonuses came out, too. They had to have that diagnosis in order to get the 20% bonus for COVID patients. So
every COVID patient, they got 20% bonus. All right, now follow this. This is a hospital.
Any patient that was admitted that had a COVID diagnosis, they got a 20% bonus for that. If they were put on remdesivir, that was a new technology. And new tech codes can apply for an additional 20% bonus in payment because of the risk of an unproven technology.
20% more for killing people with an unproven technology, which we know now and knew then, was killing people, was causing the lungs to fill up with fluid, among other things, and forcing people to be put on vent, which is out the back door, to the mortuary.
Remdesivir, Gilead had actually applied for a new tech bonus payment for remdesivir. So the new code was created for remdesivir in April. And that's actually what launched the hospital protocols, because people were actually doing well when they were treating them with hydroxychloroquine, which came from Operation Warp Speed, actually, and the national stockpile of hydroxychloroquine. Hospitals got a free donation of that, like, right at the end of March. And then 3 days later, you know, a few days later, April 1st, the new diagnosis came out. The bonus for remdesivir came out, and it was like a line in the sand. We stopped azithromycin and hydroxychloroquine, and we went straight to remdesivir, where we got the bonus. And then, of course, we got a 20% bonus for putting patients on a ventilator also.
Get it? You go into a hospital back then, and even now, and you're walking into a jungle of bonuses for the hospital. And they kill people. Remdesivir is, in my view, virtually 100% fatal. It's a disaster for the body. These people knew what they were doing, and still do to this moment.
So, also, the other part of that was the PCR tests. So I noticed that I actually worked in a hospital university lab for a long time. My mom was a medical technologist. That was her profession my whole life. And I had actually run at one point the rapid... They used to call it a rapid flu test way back in like 2004 when I was working in a lab. And that was the prototype for the COVID-19 PCR test. It's basically a PCR test, but it's not quite the same methodology of how you do the cycle threshold thing. So when the COVID-19 test came out, there was a whole thing that happened with that too. And that sort of came with bonuses and incentives also that were not super easy to see on the surface. But what happened was the CARES Act provided money for all the COVID-19 PCR testing. So normally testing costs hospitals money, and so they don't like to do a whole lot of diagnostic testing to identify a virus or do cultures or anything necessarily. They actually start treatment before they know what pathogen they're dealing with, and then they may do identification later.
Isn't that nice? They don't want to run tests for the patient's benefit. They start treatment, and then they try and figure out what they're treating later. Brilliant.
They start an antibiotic or whatever, you know, preliminary treatment they're going to do. And initially with PCR tests, I don't know if you remember, but they had like tents set out where people could go and get PCR testing, but you had to have symptoms at that time. They were saying there was like a shortage of testing. And it took, I don't know, maybe a month or so until they started screening everybody. Well, when they went from you had to have symptoms to get the PCR test, there was hardly any patients that had it. And then when they switched to now it's readily available, the CDC says that every hospital can do their own testing. And so we brought it in-house, and hospitals didn't have to send it to a different lab and wait a week to get the results back. Then we could do it all the time. So then 80% of our patient population became COVID positive, whether they had symptoms or not.
Okay. I think many of you remember how the PCR test was grossly misused, mislabeled, and even the inventor, Dr. Carey Mullis, who I believe we think he was murdered in all likelihood, because he would not have stood for the PCR test becoming the gold standard in terms of diagnosing somebody with COVID. It's not designed to do that. And it turns out that if you turn up the cycles in a PCR test, you can just about find anything you want. It's not a diagnostic test like that. It's
right.
All lies. Lies. Everywhere lies. Lies and lies. All right, we're going to jump forward on this and buckle your seatbelts, all right? I'm very serious. This is very heavy information. Stunning for you newcomers, and some of you have been around for a while, maybe not so much, but this is powerful.
So do you believe that people are saying that their loved ones were killed in hospitals with the COVID protocol, and that should never have happened, obviously. Do you believe them?
100%. I knew they were killing people. I knew they were killing people in the hospital. I would cry myself to sleep at night, even thinking about giving my speech today. Sorry. There was so much death. It was almost unbearable. Hospitals became the place where people go to die instead of the place where people go to get better. They separated newborns from their moms. They let people die alone without being able to say goodbye. They drugged them and they strapped them down, and people died without being able to say goodbye to their family. Some of them just got a phone call. Some didn't get anything. Some of them just weirdly died in the middle of the night when there was a skeleton crew on, and they had been doing fine up until that point. And then just all of a sudden, overnight, they crashed. I don't know what happened. And that had never happened before the COVID protocol rolled out in 2020. So yeah, when they say they killed people, I agree with them. And I told people from probably April on, don't go to the hospital. They're killing people in there. Stay away. I don't know what's wrong. I didn't know what was doing it. I honestly didn't know it was the vents. I didn't know it was the remdesivir until I looked into it later and I was able to kind of connect all the dots. But I knew they were killing people.
What about vaccine injury? The ones that actually took the shots, what did you see there?
Massive. I didn't know it was possible for a human to die so horrifically and so quickly before they rolled out the mRNA injections. It was insane. I've never seen anything like that. The worst of them were the ones, they called it sepsis, but it was like instant multi-organ failure. Like within hours, patients would die of liver, lung, kidney, all at once failure, respiratory failure. It was like there. Some of the records that emergency crew that found them, it's like their body tried to reject everything, and some of these cases, like their family would be there 30 minutes before, and then within an hour they're dead. And then there were patients coming in with seizures like I've never seen before. We couldn't control some of them. Days patients would be seizing, and no medications would stop it. And eventually, they kind of had to be put down. They called it encephalitis or encephalopathy. And then later on, they even the coding information organization AHIMA admitted COVID-19 associated encephalitis. There were blood clots, strokes. The clots were insane. Never seen clots like that before. Even the interventional radiologists that were going in with, they have angiopathies and, different scopes where they can do, like, heart interventions and put stents in, like, a carotid artery if you have a stroke going to your brain. Normally it's rare to have more than one stent go in. And they were documenting, multiple locations all at once. They had heart attack cases that were like that, where they, they needed massive amounts of stents that they never needed before. There were people in their 20s that had been hiking that were totally healthy, had been running marathons, that suddenly needed a leg amputated because they had a massive blood clot going from their hip all the way down to their leg, and it couldn't be saved. So that happened. There were some cases of overnight spinal gangrene, which I've never seen before.
How many of you have ever heard of spinal gangrene? I never had. Neither had she. Just one of the incredible variety of hallmarks of killing people with this stuff.
And you can't amputate, the spine when it goes gangrenous. Normally they cut out tissue that's dying like that, so it prevents further infection. And they didn't know what to do. The only thing they could do was, basically replace that part of your spine with an implant. That's the best they could do. It was really intense. And I didn't question the vaccines as much as I should have. I started to about the flu shot way back in 2004. But with the pressure to get the COVID-19 shot, I started looking into what it could do. And I knew I didn't want anything to do with this experimental mRNA thing. And when I started looking into the experts that were saying, well, this is what this potential vaccine could do, this is what the research says, I was looking at the vaccine trials and what was happening to those patients.
Please don't ever forget, don't use the word experimental or failed experimental. There was nothing experimental about this at all.
No.
It was a designed, a created, a built and deployed weapon of death. It's a biological weapon of death, doing exactly what it was built to do. So there's nothing experimental whatsoever about it.
Guillain-Barré, that was happening, and the strokes that were happening. And so I kind of knew to look for that when the vaccine came out. And the doctors were, baffled. They weren't connecting the dots. But to me, knowing what the potential causes or potential symptoms of a vaccine injury could be, we 100% had all the things that I just described. But doctors would never tell you that. They would just say it's a stroke, it's a heart attack, it's a blood clot, and they would never connect the two.
Is there anything that would make you take a vaccination of any kind ever again?
They would have to kill me. Nothing. Nothing would make me take it. Not any more kinds. No more vaccines. Nope, I've never had COVID.
Flu or whatever.
No, I had a cold once in 4 years. I call it a cold because it felt just like a cold. I didn't have like the, I lost my sense of smell. It felt just, I mean, I wasn't even really down that bad. I just, you know, got the sniffles for a couple of days, really. It wasn't that bad. But
we have made a long and concerted effort to get the idea across that you have a choice as to whether or not you're going to take any vaccines and your children. And I just can't even believe if I were a parent and had my children given this death potion, how I could I couldn't deal with it. That would be beyond belief. No needles. You don't need any needles. No vaccines. You don't need vaccines. The healthiest kids I know are kids that were not vaccinated. They grew up with a natural, wonderful, robust immune system because it saw these pathogens, it learned, it built its own. Anyway.
Zinc and vitamin C and glutathione every day, and I eat clean, try and take care of myself, so.
Is there anything else you want to add to the story? Anything else you want to say?
I don't know.
Would you take someone you love into hospital?
No. I mean, there's a... That's a really hard question, because I want to say 100% no. But there are some exceptions where, you know, if you have a massive injury where your arm's broken, you know, like a holistic doctor isn't going to be able to set it in the same way depending on what kind of a break it is. They might not be able to do the diagnostics. But them coming at me with a needle of any kind, I don't really trust it. I don't trust PCR tests. I'm not going to let a doctor try and diagnose me based on that. I would have to know the doctor or the care team, that hospital. Like, I would have to vet them. And my dad's, you know, probably going to need care soon. So I'm working as best I can to try and keep him at home.
Are you employed again?
No. I have not worked in 3 years. I have tried not to go back into healthcare because I knew I wasn't going to get an exemption. And I mean, I'm kind of trying to go back into it now, and they're still requiring. It even says right in some of the job descriptions that COVID-19 is still going to be required, and they're very limited exemptions allowed, and then all the other vaccines are still required. So probably not a good chance that I would get a job in healthcare if that's part of it. I wanted to grow food and maybe work with animals like I did before I went into healthcare, but that's been really hard to get into. There's not a lot out there, and I'm a woman, so apparently I'm the wrong gender to start farming or working with animals or growing vegetables.
Okay, that's the end. And we wish her well. She sure as hell can get out there and do those things, no matter what gender she is. I hope she doesn't let that slow her down. She's seen a lot, and that was a very interesting expose, to put it mildly.
Yeah. Some truth bombs there.
Yeah. All right, let's jump over to our, we'll try and put as much as we can into each hour we spend with you. We've got a lot of more anecdotal reports from people who are suffering. And once again, there's a pall of grief and anguish over this country and misery, physical misery, people who have been vax injured or shed upon and are vax injured. Okay, let's jump in here and see what we've got here. We've got heart issues from shedding sickness. We have a couple of those. We have unvax victim of shedding.
What date are you on?
ALS. Oh, I'm on 26th and the 24th.
Okay.
First the 24th. It was the heart issues and shedding sickness. There's two. There's a thread of two there. That's,
yep.
You got it?
Yep.
Okay. Go ahead with the first one there, right there. It's just two. Go ahead.
Okay. Reading everyone's shedding comments, trying to decipher what's happening to me. I am an RN working again in an emergency department since August last year, after being excluded due to the mandates. But since returning, I'm finding my muscles are so painful, really painful. And even walking up an incline sometimes make me wonder what is going on with them. Most of the patients we see are jabbed multiple times and have come in with some ailment often appearing jab-related. Although the patients often join the dots, they are not getting that answer from the medical staff. Meanwhile, on my days off, it takes me a while to recover. It's so bad that I'm looking at a really soft mattress topper to cope with the nighttime pain. I'm thinking of the iodine in the nasal passages prior to going to crowded places. I also get a very runny nose at work or at the grocery store, just clear. I had a GP visit recently, and my blood work was fine, but we really didn't discuss this. I will also continue vitamin C more regularly, as well as quercetin. I've sometimes succumbed to aspirin for the pain, which has helped.
All right, somebody responds and asks a question, I think, if I'm reading this right. Can you work in some other situation where you aren't getting it all day long? And the original poster, am I doing this right?
Yep.
I got it right. Good. Good. Only took 3 years. I'm casual, which is a good thing. And the shifts aren't as long due to this. But as casual, we are still put on the roster, but can request when not available. I'm not a mask fan, but now I'm thinking of using them more often if in confined rooms with a person. I actually did this at the medical center where I was working until late 2021, where most of my patients were jabbed, and I was seeing them in a small room. Oh, how many times have we talked about these little 8x10 rooms? As their chronic disease management nurse, I often was questioned why, because the patient said they were jabbed. It was difficult trying to explain that I wasn't, and apparently there was evidence of shedding. At some time, I had come across a Pfizer document outlining the stage 3 part of the trial, which stated clearly that those in the trial needed to stay away from pregnant ladies, and if they had been exposed, they would also need to be watched. Trying to show this to my colleagues didn't work out well, of course, they thinking it was all just a conspiracy. Good luck. You know, even the professionals demonstrate a rather appalling lack of common sense when it comes to this, and they're exposed to it all the time. A lot of the professionals just, I don't know. Very disappointing.
Well, I mean, obviously, her health is on the line, so, you know, you're going to have to make a choice.
You do. Exactly.
And it's unfortunate that it comes to that. You know, we try to, warn people in the beginning that there's no option other than to mitigate exposure. Because once you've gone past that threshold, whatever your personal threshold is,
right,
you are forever sensitized to this thing. You're having, an immune reaction. And
yes.
You know, when you have this reaction, your blood's getting destroyed, and you're starting that heme cycle again.
Remember, blood is the primary target. Don't forget. All right, let's try and duck this one in. This is heart issues from shedding. Okay, let me grab the first one. You take the second and third. I think we can do it. May I ask how many here have heart issues without being vaxxed, without sexual intercourse with a vaxxed person? Heart problems here. No one in my house is vaxxed. Wife and I are completely monogamous. We had a major shedding event in spring of 2021 at a campground in Florida, surrounded by retired people getting the vax. For 6 weeks, we, 9 in my family, shared the campground, swimming pool, and hot tub with people who were recently vaxxed. We got sick and have been prone to sickness ever since. Our heart problems occur now when we get around the wrong vaccinated people. For example, I spent a lot of time around my vaxxed brother last summer. No issue. I spent 1.5 hours around my wife's vaxxed brother, and my wife and the 6 males in our home all had heart issues, heart pain. My wife thought she may have even had a light heart attack one night. Blood clot noises at blood clot noses. My wife and post-puberty daughter had major blood clots on their now irregular timed and duration cycles. My wife felt that she could feel her blood surging through her whole body, like she would feel every vein and artery. And it was a painful, almost burning sensation that lasted for 48 hours. It took about 6 months after the 1.5 hour encounter for us to seem like we were back to normal in the heart-blood sense, though our immune systems were still trashed, so we picked up colds and flu easily, even with all 9 of us bouncing back and forth to reinfect each other. No intercourse with any vaxxed, just spent time with the wrong one, have tried ivermectin, black seed oil, and honey, and colloidal gold, neem, selenium, bromelain, etc., etc. Nothing seems to help, though we feel we could live a normal life. Okay, go ahead. Take number 2 and 3 there. Jump up.
Another person says, so sorry to hear. Yes, it seems like nothing really helps. Some days my heart is much better, and then it gets much worse again. Let's see. Another one says, my heart shook violently in my chest twice after a double-vax person breathed on me for a long time in the middle of October 2021. I think she had the second one not long before she breathed on me. So that happened the same evening. In the morning hours, I got a very bad headache that lasted for days. When I got up, my nose started to bleed. 2 big blue circles on my legs, ear shut closed for a day, tinnitus for a day. I felt like I wanted to start with my cycles again, all the severe pain and bloating, but nothing. My kidneys pained badly. I had diarrhea very bad, could not eat a lot of foods. My pancreas was badly infected, liver was swollen, right leg pained very hard. I had GERD all of a sudden. Lymph under my left arm was swollen, nerve pain in my legs very bad. I got blood clots in my colon, excruciating pain. I thought it was going to kill me. My feet cracked open and started to bleed. I had rashes on my skin that would not go away, canker sores on my lip that would not heal. Bloodshot eyes. My eyes got so bad I had to wear reading glasses. Very bad urinary tract infections. Pain in my right breast where I had surgery years ago. Angina pains in my heart. Very bad brain fog. I would fall asleep during the day. Very low energy. Anemia. Insomnia. Hormones wacko. And my ovaries pained. And the list goes on.
Unbelievable. And
yeah.
Again, it started out with her heart shaking violently in her chest twice after a double-vaxxed person breathed on her for a long time in the middle of October 2021. That's all it took. Aerosolized transmission. Exhalation.
There's one last one there.
Go ahead.
I had ventricular tachycardia in 2021 after being shed on by my daughter and sister-in-law. I didn't know they were vaxxed. I had to have an ablation. No heart disease at all. Sucks.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Take shedding seriously. And again, we don't like saying this, but the only viable thing to do is wear a mask and stay away from your vaxxed opposite. It's the truth. It's not pleasant.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting dosed with poison.
Absolutely. All right. Very good. Go have some, go have a chocolate milkshake. Do something for yourself.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
It's late here.
All right. Good night.
All right. Good night, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
All right, gang, we'll be right back with another hour next.